Welcome to the after party. It's time to change. You're just getting started. You can teach an old dog new ways, and not just on Saturdays.
Hey, you all. It's Anna David with the After Party Pod. Yeah, how are you? I'm recording this Friday, dark out, six-ish. And this is an exciting podcast for me, an exciting episode to give you. And I'm going to get to that in a second. But first, I wanted to just check in and let you know. Well, the last episode, I talked about how it was my anniversary or anniversary week or something. So it's just like a couple days later that I'm recording this episode. And I took a cake today, and if you don't live in California or a place where people do that, maybe you don't know what that is. And in fact, I once asked somebody to give me a cake once who didn't know, and he brought a cake, like a huge cake, to a meeting, and you don't have to do that. In fact, it was sweet but very strange. And, you know, it's just basically like, you know, that thing that you see in movies where the person gets up at the podium and starts talking, and you go, really? Is that really what happens at meetings? Anyway, that does happen when people are celebrating 365 days of continuous sobriety. And it's like I want a medal. I don't want a medal for the time. I want a medal for how profound my speech is that I give, which is never that profound, ever. And it's, you know, you're meant to help the newcomer and not try to, you know, feed your own ego. But you know what? It was better. It was better. I had girls I sponsor give me cake. It was good. I got a little, not quite choked up, but, you know, a little verklempt. Do they say that? I don't even know. I felt it, which is progress, frankly. And, you know, but honestly, it's sort of like, I can't remember if I said this to you before, but it's like, I'm not a New Year's resolution person because I feel like, well, every day if you're in a program and you're working on yourself, you're kind of striving to do something to improve yourself and your life. So it seems kind of silly to make a list and that day commit to doing it when it's not very realistic because, you know, it's sort of like joining the gym and working out every day for like a month and then, you know, burning yourself out. You know, I think it works better if we're just like, yeah, I'm going to focus on this. I'm not going to focus on it to the exclusion of everything else and put all this pressure on myself because change is hard and happens slowly. But anyway, and I think my point was that it's a big deal every day you're sober. It's not just a big deal on the anniversary of the day you got sober. So I say that to you as my thought for the day. Now, the guest I have is a really good friend of mine. And when I say a really good friend, I mean like we've been to the Dominican Republic together. We have been to Spain together. We have been to Idlewild together. That's a great place, by the way. We've just been friends for 15 years or something like that. And it was fun to have a really good friend on the podcast. His name is John Griffiths. He is delightful, or he wouldn't be a good friend of mine, frankly. And he's been sober. Jesus, I'm so bad at this part. 10 years? I don't know. We get into it in the episode. Wow. Frankly, quite a while. Many years. And he's really, really into being sober. He and I met when we worked at People Magazine together in the 90s. And he is now the television critic for Us Weekly, and he has been for over a decade. And, you know, he, even though, of course, you know, with your friends, you know their stories, but there was so much I learned in talking to him that I had no idea about. But basically, I'll give you the broad strokes. He's 51. He grew up in Southern California. He had his first drink at 5. That's something I just learned. And then, you know, started heavily drinking more in college, and then it was pot and alcohol and eventually meth. And he talks about how he got into that, how he got out of that. And, you know, unlike a lot of the other episodes, you know, we talk a lot about the work of recovery. Oh, we take a long segue into suicide, which is Always a fun topic. We also take a long segue into the word segue, which is weird. But you know, he talks about being gay and how that impacted, what that has to do, what that had to do for him with his alcoholism and his shame. And we get into character defects. We get into the whole thing. So I know you will love him. I know I do. This is John Griffiths.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God, I think my copy has like blood stains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal, I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, as right. I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
Hello?
Sure.
We're going. It's happening.
Oh, hey, Anna.
Oh, hey, John.
It's so nice to see you. Thank you for having me on your lovely show.
Well, thank you for being here. This is truly, I've said this before, but this is true. Like, you are the closest friend I've ever had on this podcast. So we speak so much.
I am so honored. I mean, that is a sweet thing to say, and I love you.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've had friends of yours. I've had previous guest, Bennett Yellen,
yeah.
Who's, I believe his movie is number one at the box office
who knew?
Right now.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of figured that out.
We all knew. Dumb and Dumber 2.
I went to a screening with him last Friday.
And some
other friends.
Oh, fancy. You and Jim Carrey and Bennett.
Well, we took a photo with Jim and... what's the other guy? Jeff.
Oh, you know, yeah. Jeff Daniels. That's
but
all.
It was a poster, a big like cutout.
Well,
thing.
You know.
Yeah.
You know.
I'll take what I can get.
The same thing. And you and Bennett, nice segue, used to have a radio show about addiction and recovery.
That is a lovely segue. I like the one you're writing right now, by the way.
Yeah.
I didn't know you interviewed people while writing a segue.
Did you know I've never been on a segue? I don't think I know you. You have not either.
I have once been on a segue with a friend of mine, Kyle.
Okay.
And
who I've met.
Yeah. He has or had a Segway.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why. Or maybe he was like renting it for the weekend or something. I guess you can rent Segways.
You're claiming that you did a double, like you were on it as well?
I did it. I hopped on a Segway and I rode it around for a little bit. And uh-huh. I was jealous because my other friends, they did it well.
Uh-huh.
But...
there's a scale.
I was sort of like teetering and tottering, like, you know, get me off of this thing. This is scary.
That I can picture.
The Segway. Well, so, you heard about the guy that, like, didn't the inventor...
die
like,
on one?
Yeah.
I made that up.
No, he, like, went over a cliff or something.
Oh, my God.
Whoops.
Whoa, that's bad. I was just reading a thing today about how GPSs are making us dumber, because all I do is use a GPS, even to go to places I go every day.
I've driven with you in a car.
Yeah, you know that.
With the GPS drove. I think we had a name for her.
We did. We named her, like, Sally or something.
Or Delilah, I don't know.
Did we drive to San Francisco?
We did.
We drove that whole
way. Boy, this is awfully intimate. Do you think that you're... your
they
legions of listeners are, yeah, I guess this is behind the scenes of
millions
Anna.
Millions of people downloading it. No, you guys, so into these people, these listeners. Just go along with the ride. Is it fun? You know I don't know how to sound edit, so it's all in here. Oh, yeah.
You're doing great. Now, this is fun so far. I thought you were inviting your listeners to go on a segue with you. Or in your car with the GPS.
The after party pod. Oh, my point is that I was reading a story about how GPSs are making us dumber and, obviously, and also cutting down on our ability to have, like, good spatial relations, which is, I already lack. And it was about, you know, obviously people driving off cliffs and into lakes and stuff like that.
Right, right. Well, you see it on the road. It's like, and even pedestrians, like, you know, with their iPad. This is turning into kids today.
Yeah.
But it's true, you know, I just, that's where some of my character defects pop up, by the way, if you want to talk recovery. And I get, if I ever wind up in being charged with something, I deny I'm saying this, what I'm about to say.
You shouldn't. Incriminating evidence.
Well, it's just that I get very road ragey, light, behind the wheel at drivers who are on their cell phones. But you know what? I'm guilty of it. Mm-hmm. You know, who isn't out there in listener land?
I would say road rage comes up at least every other episode on this, just because I think it's a common issue for sober alcoholics. You are the least rageful person I know. You got mad at me once in our 17 years of knowing each other.
How long have we
known each other?
This is so celeb rehab.
Wait, we met in, I want to say, 96.
96, those were the days. Yeah, that was People Magazine.
We worked at People Magazine.
Yeah.
And
a guy named Johnny is still there. I think he's the last remnant.
Oh, is he? Oh, yeah. That's true. Everyone else is gone.
Yeah. I mean, they're still with us, but...
Yeah, sorry, they didn't OD or anything, you know, in this podcast, you got to be careful.
Right, right.
But yeah, I was fired as a direct result of my alcoholism, and you know that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I didn't know. I don't know.
It was not that I was drinking.
You know me, I have a different take on that to some extent. You know, like, you know your story better than I do, but I know it pretty well, and I know that... You know, we have a disease of perception, too.
Well, we can, do.
We have black and white thinking sometimes.
There might be a little slam of the door, guys. Don't worry. Oh, look at that.
This is an interesting setting where the offices of After Party Chat are. It's sort of like a, not a commune, but... I mean, everybody, you are wearing a turban right now. You
it's
look great.
It's true, and we're cooking.
Hello, come on in. That is the... believe it or not, this is that's the next door office.
By the way... These people know a little bit. We talk about The Office some. It's always good to talk on a podcast about things people cannot see because it's super interesting.
Oh, we paint
them.
Yeah, paint a picture, a visual, and just imagine any office space like the movie or the TV show The Office. You know, you're going to have your nutty people walking around. You're going to have your hipsters.
It's not like that because those people all work at the same company.
Right.
Okay, I'm getting worried that we are not getting into alcoholism nearly enough.
Maybe we are a little bit.
We are. But I'm obsessive. Also being controlling and don't hold your mic close to your face.
Okay,
yeah, that's perfect.
I really want to sing with this thing.
I know.
Can you picture I'm holding a microphone? Anyway, yes, let's talk recovery.
Yeah, so... Okay, so you...
Well, just to... We met, and then we didn't know that we were both, you know, in our disease.
No, we didn't know, we were not partying together.
No.
That's an understatement.
And I don't think we knew that we had a disease necessarily.
No, everyone else was the problem.
Yeah,
certainly didn't have a problem.
Oh, my God.
But you... Okay, so 96. So you were... When did you first drink, John Griffiths?
I first had a drink... I was in love with my best friend.
Uh-huh. And, John is gay. I'm just going to out you.
Yeah,
right now.
I'm just... super gay. No, I'm gay. I'm 5 on the 1 to 10 scale of not the bell curve. Just me. This is going to sound. And I also have internalized homophobia. I think I used to. One of the big things I used to drink over was the fact that I was gay.
Mm-hmm.
I even tried to kill myself. My first sip of alcohol was something like licorice flavored when I was 5. And that was when I snuck into like my mom's liquor cabinet just to see what it tasted like. And I was like, that is disgusting. Never again. But then finally, I fell in love with my best friend who was straight in high school. And that was so painful and uncomfortable and just, you know, I was a spy. I was living a lie. And I had to keep it secret. I told nobody. You know, I had no confidant. And I might have if I opened up. But at the time, this was like, you know, the late 70s. I'm 1,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Graduated 81. So I just... did you just say I'm not? Anna, for the record, is about 10 years younger than I am.
No, I said you're not. You're not 1,000 years old. I'd like to clarify in case somebody thought that was accurate.
I thought you just said, as an aside, I'm not. Anyway.
No, I'm 1,003, let's be honest.
You're a gorgeous 1,003.
So
anyway, I manipulatively, in a moment to get closer to him, I got bombed.
Mm-hmm.
And really wanted to connect, and that's... I don't know why I thought that would be the way to do it, but it kind of worked in some way. I mean, just like getting to know him better, but not
your best
physically.
Friend.
Yeah.
So you already knew him well, though.
Yeah, but like to like really, I was like I was so besotted that I just wanted more, just mm-hmm. like any alcoholic, mm-hmm. you know, or addict. Hello, come on in. Just suffice to say, we're okay every time that big thunderous thing
not
noise
an earthquake.
Clap happens.
I know we're in LA. It's not an earthquake.
Just pretend it's applause. So I was in love and I sort of drank, but it early on, like it really helped me to connect with his friends and make friends. And I got stoned and drunk and it was fun for years. I went to college and I made friends because I started, you know, not because, but it helped a great deal. You know, I always thought I was fun and a great guy and really interesting and smart and different and unique. And I just was amazing. And I had that big baby in me that, you know, they call the king baby. And one of the pieces of books, literature out there you can read about alcoholism.
Uh-huh.
And I had king baby-itis. And mm-hmm. I... when I started when I was stoned and drunk at parties, that came out my fun side. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was not this like gay kid in mothballs, for lack of a better visual. Mm-hmm. I was the fun guy, and mm-hmm. I made friends, and it was great for years and years. And I did coke and ecstasy in college.
But hold on. So you had that drink at 5, and then uh-huh. when did you start drinking regularly?
I was a binge drinker. Mm-hmm. So it would be, college. High school, not really. Mm-hmm. Not really. Just college, like maybe freshman year of college.
And you went to USC, correct?
Well, I went to Orange Coast College for 2 years first, and then USC.
I mean, how about edited out of your resume for a friend of 15
well,
years?
Well, you know.
Never knew that about you.
Oh, it's a dark secret. But, you know, I can say it now that Joel McHale did the Community.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's hipper now. Legit. And I've been told I look like him.
You know what?
Or maybe act like him.
You know, I see it.
Yeah.
I see it.
I got to lose some weight.
So, hold on.
He's got a rockin' bod, by the way.
So, hold on. You start drinking freshman year, and did you always want to go to USC?
Yes, I had a little map, mm-hmm. little plan. I wanted to be a TV programmer like Fritz Silverman or Brandon Tartikoff, but I didn't know how to go about that. It was at the time when, because I'm 51, I knew nobody. There were 3 networks, and it just seemed like the Holy Grail. So I majored in PR through mm-hmm. the journalism school, mm-hmm. took all the journalism classes that were required, and print, broadcast, and my emphasis was PR, and I thought I'd get into entertainment PR, and then somehow segue into programming or something, but that didn't really pan out. But it did lead me to People Magazine.
Can we talk about that amazing thing you showed me that you made? I guess it was in college or maybe high school. I think it was like a TV schedule.
I see where this is going. You're trying to dig out a obsessive behavior.
No, I'm not. The truth is, this podcast is equal parts talking about addiction and equal parts talking about career. And I uh-huh. think it was really. Yes. Okay. So you wanted to be Brandon Tartikoff, but you were obsessed with television. Now you're a TV critic. So I think
that's fascinating,
motivating, and interesting.
Yeah, and it's also sort of spiritual too. Not that my journey as a TV critic is spiritual, but just how things sort of
Us
lined
Weekly
up
is very spiritual.
Well, for people that in a way it is, and I'll tell you why. And that's sort of like that's a teaser for an upcoming moment.
Yes.
I was so in those mothballs, closed up and sort of traumatized by, living in a world where people, you don't think that people are going to love you anymore if they find out you're gay. So before I had pot and alcohol and cocaine and ecstasy, et cetera. Oh, then there's that. Talk about teasers.
Yeah.
Literally. What does that mean? But I'll explain. I escaped into TV. That was my first addiction. Mm-hmm. Some people have sugar or spinning, twirling, which is such an odd thing.
How many people really have twirling?
I've heard about it a lot. It's odd. Yeah, little kids. Like, if your kid twirls a lot, look out.
I remember in eighth grade, we did that thing at my friend's party where you could lean on each other's chests and make each other pass out.
Asphyxiate each other.
Yeah, you never did that?
No, I never saw the appeal of that. But
I did. I don't know. I think I thought it was weird, but it was like an activity. And her dad was there. And he right. was just like, I don't care.
Oh, my God.
We had near beer. Remember near beer?
This is Northern California, so he was probably stoned.
I grew up in a commune. I still am working in a commune.
God bless.
So
I was addicted to TV. It was mm-hmm. my escape and also my godsend. Like everything, works for a while, mm-hmm. So I had my own fake network. I created this fantasy virtual network, before the advent of the computer, really. Now I'm going to kill myself.
They didn't have computers when I went to college, okay?
Uh-huh. Okay, all right.
Like,
I was going through some stuff. When I first started my job at Us Weekly as the television critic, mm-hmm. which was 11 years ago, mm-hmm. I was getting screeners for shows in VHS form.
Yeah? I think that I used to go over and watch them with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And now we're they're phasing out the CDs for you people interested in that.
Well, yeah. I mean, CDs. What are those?
I mean, DVDs. Sorry. Oh. See? DVD. They're just sending links.
Yeah.
Links.
Yeah. Why not?
Anyway, this before we get into the the
depressing
total the minutia, the DVD was created in. So anyway, I created this. It was NBS, this TV network, and I wrote all I came up with shows, and I had ratings for them, and I would have I would write variety articles that on. Ruled paper with pens, and Davy Griffiths, that was my middle name or nickname.
Yeah.
Davy Griffiths, president of NBS. He had to cancel 5 shows this season. It was an off season for NBS. but then we would always come back, mm-hmm. and I did this for years. It was just, it was fun. Mm-hmm. And I was a lonely kid, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah.
And you had a lot of step siblings.
I did. My mom left my dad when she was preggers with me. That's a word I learned from People magazine, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. That
back in the day.
Canoodling.
Yeah. Right. Canoodling. Oh, my God. So, yeah, my mom came from a very sort of, if you will, fancy upbringing. Mm-hmm. Only child. My dad, middle class and only child. And my mom, they were living in Bogota, Colombia. My dad worked for the government. U.S. government, and he was sort of, I guess, a workaholic, and he's a great guy, but he wasn't necessarily attentive to mm-hmm. my mom, mm-hmm. and my mom is very ethereal and floaty and romantic and into D.H. Lawrence. I think some of this, and she. Maybe had a mild nervous breakdown she just didn't like it there. Mm-hmm. And she was feeling very lonely. Mm-hmm. And she fell for this Hungarian guy who turned out to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
And she, boom, that's funny. Hungarian gay guy. Boom. So she didn't have an affair with him, but she became friends. Mm-hmm. And he offered to be my father. Mm-hmm. I have a little note that he wrote, and he was very handsome, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Hot daddy. But my mom decided to leave my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And so came back to LA, lived in Hancock Park for a little bit. Stop me when this gets to be routine or boring. My mom then, we lived for a little bit after we lived in Newport Beach. And then after that, my mom, when I was 5, my mom met this guy with 8 kids from his previous marriage and fell in love.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a reversal of fortune. Mm-hmm. So when I was 5, I moved into this house in the valley in Van Nuys called El Ranchito. They had a little name for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this clapboard house, sort of Running with Scissors-esque, but not even that, more like Tobacco Road, as neighbors called it. It was that house, mm-hmm. Holes in the wall and from kids, just getting in fights and the kitchen counters just very, filled with dirt and, streaming down the cupboards and that had been there for a while. And
so sort of Grey Gardens.
Yeah. When it was raining, all the pots and pans would come out to catch the water. And they were a loving, good group of kids, that I was never bullied, but I was little Stewie from Family Guy. I was mm-hmm. just like, ew, this will not do. And so I ultimately asked to live with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Newport Beach in high school there. And that was not necessarily fun either. But I did make friends ultimately there, thanks to booze and pot.
How much do you think what you're describing has to do with your alcoholism?
Oh, and just if that doesn't sound like it tracks, I did do, in a way, because I went to Orange Coast College for a couple of years, the first year, a lot of my friends were still in high school because mm-hmm. I was a senior and they were juniors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where, I hung out with them a lot still, I didn't want the future to happen. I didn't know anything about getting a job. When I graduated from college too, same thing. I spent a semester getting drunk mm-hmm. with a friend, and it would always be binge drinking
Are you avoiding my question?
Oh, when did I, what? Oh, I'm sorry.
How much did that...
I'm sure I am.
You are. This is psychology at work.
Uh-oh.
Now I feel bad asking you again.
No.
Maybe you need
to. I'm all answers, baby. What do you got?
Okay. So that was the straightest you've ever been since I've known you. How much do you think that your childhood has to do with your alcoholism?
It was a great excuse to drink and drug for a while. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't... As I've told my mom... we've talked about it, about those days, and she said, that must have been difficult for you. I said, Mom, you know, it wasn't terrific to some extent, but it's not like, if anything, it helped make me a better person. And it's not like I was like living in a mud hut in Darfur. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, a ramshackle house in the valley.
Mm-hmm. But all of it.
Gay, yeah. I think... You know, I was shell-shocked after I was born. It wasn't I was shell-shocked because I was gay. Right. I was a shy kid who was a little superior. My mom says that, you know, when she was pushing me in a cart, I would, like, at a department store, I'd, like, look around and I'd go, pretty, pretty, pretty.
What's wrong with that?
Dirty. You know, I would be, like, super judgmental, like this needs to be fixed. So I think I was, and so as I told my mom, you know, I'm grateful for those years because I think I'd be a lot more snooty to this day. I just said like different levels of socioeconomic, you know, ability or whatever, you know, status but I think I was just born uncomfy.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And baby wants to be comfy.
Uh-huh.
Here comes a boom.
He closed it so softly.
Oh.
Wow. That's great.
Closing in so
anyway, then you drinking throughout college, having fun,
yeah,
being the life of the party a little,
vomiting out windows, vomiting out car doors occasionally. People over occasionally saying things like, "Is John an alcoholic?"
How do you know they were saying that?
I'd hear it.
You'd overhear?
Yeah.
You sure
my friend Jamie said that one time. No.
He said it. Okay.
And so, yeah. And there were some times where I'm like, why did I do that? I would always tell myself, oh, that was hilarious. Like I would, like some friends and I went out to a really nice dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I got smashed and I opened the door to the restaurant while everybody was still seated.
Mm-hmm.
And like the whole restaurant. And I screamed at the top of my lungs, just like, and I don't know if that's that funny.
No, it's not. It's not at all, but you remember doing that?
Yeah. And there were, there was a lot of, because it was college, you could pass it off as
antics, college know. Antics.
I had friends that were like almost swallowed, you know, vomit, you know, in their sleep and died.
Okay.
So, hi, let's get real. Let's bring it down.
So then what you graduate from college.
I graduated from college and this trajectory, I didn't know what to do with my life. And I somehow, at college, I wrote for a magazine that I helped start that wound up going, like being distributed as a freebie across certain parts of the country. And I interviewed Keanu Reeves and Chris Isaac. And that stuff got me to People Magazine. And I worked there as a special correspondent on contract for about 7 years.
And what was your drinking like at that point?
At that time, it just binge drinking, you know. And
what do you mean by that exactly?
Every, like, you know, I could have a glass of wine with a friend or a couple glasses and say, oh, that was fun and good night. It was very progressive for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the weekend, I'd be like, oh my God, it's Sunday. I want to have margaritas. I don't care about work, you know, and I would blow it off and have a bunch of margaritas and hook up with somebody maybe. And I came out of the closet when I was 26. And so but
late.
Even then I was like, you know, I was like out there and picking up people and, you know, being a bad boy, or, you know, and I wound up, like, you know, getting stoned a lot, I discovered pot, and then it just got to be, it just slowly progressed. The only way it affected work was the occasional, like, can I turn that in, you know, tomorrow instead of today? And that didn't seem to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started to really go, wow, it was only years later that I was like, this is starting to affect my work. Mm-hmm. I blew off something in a really bad way mm-hmm. for the Washington Post and mm-hmm. Supposed to interview an actor and bake biscotti with him for a lifestyle feature. I'll say Scott Baio. To this day, he was very nice afterward to some extent. I mean, he was initially like, furrowed brows, but I apologized profusely and he wound up, it turned out to be okay. And, through the years, I hope to bump into him is all I'll say.
Anyway.
So yeah, I blew off the interview. Mm-hmm. By that time I had discovered speed mm-hmm. and the gay epidemic. Mm-hmm. And how that sort of progressed, all the sort of wah, wah, wah loneliness.
Oh, God.
You asked about, when did I realize or feel like I was an alcoholic and did the past shape me? I feel I have a disease, a mental disorder, light, sometimes mm-hmm. not that light, mm-hmm. Born with anxiety, mm-hmm. a nervous condition. Mm-hmm. And TV calmed that.
Ice cream and cookies coming now.
Now it's cookies that sort of keep it at bay to some extent. Mm-hmm. I've picked up cigarettes just a little bit.
You're always picking them up and putting
just
them down.
Just one a day, I know. I've gone for a while without them, but what gives me peace, through the years, the trajectory has been, first it was TV, like escape, mm-hmm. Then booze and pot. And then ecstasy, got it, like bonding with friends. Mm-hmm. That's what I always wanted, to like mm-hmm. really connect with people. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how. I was sort of, was restrained and uncomfortable. And knowing, like I said, that I had a lot of, fun stuff to bring to a friendship. And that really helped with friends. For years it did work. And then I discovered speed because Big Baby mm-hmm. was upset he wasn't in a relationship mm-hmm. and would go to a bar mm-hmm. or a restaurant or a party mm-hmm. or a club and see some hot guy. You know the story, like a hot guy leaving with a hot chick or a hot guy leaving with a hot guy or a friend hooking up with somebody that I liked. Mm-hmm. And this inner drama would be, that's so unfair. Where's mine? Mm-hmm. So I decided to start picking up hookers. Mm-hmm. Hi.
Hey.
Hey, Mom. If you're listening, close your ears.
The freedom that these parents don't really listen to these things. Right.
I doubt it, although whatever. But I mean, my mom sort of knows this story.
You're very open about it.
Yeah. I mean, the secret is, the secret's whole, you're only as sick as your secrets, right?
Yep. That's the saying.
I've always felt better, like in friendships and, if something's bothering you, say something, mm-hmm. Talk about it. And if you're feeling suicidal, oh my God, it's a temporary, it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Yeah.
And,
are you still working with the suicide group?
I am. I wish I could be doing more for them. Mm-hmm. I'm on the Public Awareness Task Force for the National Action Alliance for Suicide Prevention. And, it's a wonderful initiative. It's government meets, private sector. Bob Gates, helped trumpet the launch a few years ago, and it's obviously there are a lot of suicide prevention programs out there, organizations, and this just adds to the mix. And so the Public Awareness Task Force is just getting the word out mm-hmm. and figuring out how to do that best.
Getting the word out that
the organization
help.
Exists
yeah.
and help. And also, really specifically, how the media can better report on the what's really a tough problem for gay youth and mm-hmm. military members.
How closely do you see alcoholism and suicidality intertwine?
Well, it's such a mix. There's cross addiction. Just when it comes to
like co-occurring disorders, depression and alcoholism,
bipolar, and
but often when you hear about somebody killing themselves, do you think? Is your first question? I wonder if they were an addict.
I sort of, in a way, assume they were just, mm-hmm. or at least I go to like mental health issues, depression and
depression and suicide are connected.
Right, yeah, they're handmaidens.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, I know that if somebody is an alcoholic, they're likelier to kill themselves compared to somebody that isn't.
Yes,
that's a given.
Absolutely.
And there are statistics that show that. It is one of the red flag areas, you know. Yeah, and also middle-aged men.
What does that mean?
That's sort of like a silent sort of
suffering group.
Yeah, in this economy, after the economy tanked,
right?
The financial pressure and stuff has really led to some, you know, unhappy guys out there.
Yeah,
pressure.
But don't you think that circumstance? I mean, you know, it's a mental illness. Circumstances are never going to drive certain people to want to kill themselves, whereas not even especially bad circumstances can drive suicidal people to do it.
Right. I mean, there are, you know, I don't know. I can't, it's hard for me to even get in the mind of somebody that, I mean, when I say in high school, I did want to die, but I asked God, please, why did you do this? And like, why did you make me gay? And it was a very half-assed attempt.
Right.
You know, it was, my mind, I don't think was, I tried to electrocute myself.
How?
Okay. By getting my hand wet in a sink. And I had a friend there to make it, I didn't want anybody to know.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted it to look like it was just an accident.
Right.
Because I didn't want anybody to think that I was that sad, you know, for a lot of reasons. And so I just put my stereo plug into the socket and got a big shock. I thought it would get me. You know, but, you know, honestly, you know, when I think about it, I have a tendency to make excuses or just sort of gloss over some things sometimes or not, you know, or just have because I have a genuinely happy demeanor, you know, which can be misleading to myself,
right,
you know, like I can say it's no big deal and feel it, but then kind of go, dude, you tried to kill yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but I laughed as soon as it happened because I realized how ridiculous is that.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend started laughing. He said, "What happened?" And I said, "You know, I just got shocked." The irony, of course, is that I slowly tried to kill myself, subconsciously with alcohol and drugs. You know,
let's talk about the meth. So was the first time you
let's
did it.
Let's talk about the meth
with the prostitute.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was sort of Coke Light. I'd heard of speed as sort of a you know, what Louise Fletcher did in Requiem, you know, or, you know, what Housewives did in the 60s, Little Pills or Hell's Angels. And I didn't think anything of it, really. I'm like, I've been around the block, you know. It's anyway. So I did
it. What were the circumstances? Were you at your house?
At my, at the
your
time,
apartment. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And
so he bring him home.
And I, you know, yeah. And we listened to some music and we were drunk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is one of my, like, you know, semi-lost weekends. I would have terrible hangovers and stuff, but I was always getting my work done. And I, you know, it just was like every few weekends I would have this wild hair.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them. And so I was drunk and like driving around and going into bars and stuff. And then I just met this guy. His name was Jerry, I remember. And he was really nice. And because I'm a romantic, I think I get that from my mom. I always was like, you know, the one that like wanted them to know that I was the nice John that really meant that, you know, earnest like this, I respect you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that they thought I was amazing and so funny and sweet that
did.
I was a different, you know,
I
dodged several bullets, you know, like
right.
There have been people that have been chopped up literally,
I know.
And the worst that I had was that my VCR was stolen once. Remember those?
Speaking of the VHS tapes in our age,
right. So I, you know, I did it, and
so he comes over. He says, "Well, you know, I got something," and you go, "Oh, is that cocaine? Like, what happened?"
Yeah, he said, "Let's do this stuff," and I said, "Oh," and I don't want to get too graphic, but he said, "You
snorted
know,
snorted off my dick."
No, not quite.
Sorry, guys.
But you know, he just said that this will surprise you, and I'm euphemizing
your story.
Yeah,
no, okay, so it was good.
It was good for a couple of hours, but then you become this insane robot that is soulless and weird, and you keep repeating yourself, or at least I did.
That first night, even?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. But of course, like anything, you forget that part. And, you know, like the alcoholic says that they, you know, almost swallowed their tongue the first time they drank, and then they're ready to, it was still fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
So then when did that start becoming a habit?
I did that maybe every 6 months. For
the hooker and the meth?
Yeah.
And was there no meth in between?
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly it was every 3 months.
Yeah.
And then it was every month. And I can't even imagine. I'm such a lightweight. I mean, honestly, how? And it would always start with like a margarita or some beer or something at a, you know, innocent enough at a, you know, Mexican restaurant or something. Yeah. And friends would say, John, you're not, because I was started to open up, like there was bitterness that started with this. I wanted Jake Gyllenhaal or something like that. And the, you know, again, with an irony, that really tells you I wasn't looking for, you know, I wanted something amazing.
Right.
And I thought that I was getting gypped from life, that I wasn't getting what everybody else got. But who gets Jake Gyllenhaal?
Right.
You know, come on.
Kirsten Dunst.
Totally.
Taylor Swift.
Really? Oh, right.
I'm going back. God Look, I used to work at People, too. I know this stuff.
So just love. Oh, right. You know, it was just add water, you know, it suddenly you are that amazing, hot, sexy guy. And they are like thinking you're amazing. And it's just really super intense. It's like Limitless with Bradley Cooper.
Mm-hmm. And, loved that movie.
Oh, my God. It was so good. They're making a
Limitless 2.
I think a series version, believe it or not.
God, it was so good.
Yeah.
So then you...
It didn't did work you, from the get-go.
Did I'll you, just say oh, I'm that. Sorry. Did I ask you, did you do meth without hookers?
No, it was really... You know, this isn't unusual. It's pretty... Like, there are the quote, tweakers that like to take apart clocks and cars.
Yeah.
That was never, ever me.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the tweakers that like to prowl, have sex, and then have paranoid episodes, psychotic episodes afterwards, and look out the window and think that the FBI is coming after them.
And how many of those did you have?
That's when it, like, too many.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like towards the, maybe like, God, like the last 5 or 6 or 7 times I did it, you know, and I just, it got to be so miserable. That's what ultimately... You know, when they say think it through, if you have a trigger, you're like, you know, feeling like maybe I'll have a drink. Because if speed is the issue and you think that alcohol really isn't, that you didn't, then I'll just stop doing speed. I was fooling myself. It took a while because I realized, oh God, I only do it when I drink. So Jesus, I have to stop drinking?
Yeah.
And then I realized, God, like the alcohol was never my, you know, like it, for years it worked, but I was getting stoned and tipsy on red wine almost every night and eating donuts from the shop across the street from my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And for a guy that was so loving and gregarious and had parties with friends and really loved to go out and check out the new restaurant and the new club. And you know, I fancied myself a hipster, like, oh my God, I know Silver Lake. And even like in the 80s in college, it was like, Vertigo, Stock Exchange, Flaming Colossus.
I don't even know these
Oh, these are like old clubs, you know. And you know, with the, they had, you know, people dressed up back then. It was very less than zero. And wore jackets to clubs, you know. It was weird. I mean, it was great. But anyway, so...
But you weren't doing that anymore as you were home looking out the window for the FBI.
I was on my couch watching bad shows that I couldn't remember the next morning, writing down things that made no sense, that like great script idea, getting pissed off at every guy that I had met that became an executive or a TV, you know, success or something, and not thinking for a second, well, that maybe they worked for it, and I'm just sitting here doing what I'm doing right now, you know.
What were some of the notes you wrote yourself? Do you remember the ideas you had?
There's this one thing that a comic said one time that is just, to me, it just epitomizes that whole phase. He said, you know how, you know, when you're stoned, you think that you have the most genius idea. He said, I wrote this great idea down, and I'm like, oh my God, this is good. This is it. And the next morning I woke up and I looked at the note and it said, chicken monkey. what does that mean? So I had my, I know, but I have my equivalent of chicken money, chicken money.
That is a good one.
Let's make some chicken money.
So,
oh my God,
you,
that'll be five beaks, please.
So you, so stupid. So you then, said, I've got a problem. I'm going to do something about it.
And I didn't know how. Mm-hmm. And I went to the Gay and Lesbian Center in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. which is now the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian LGBT, Los Angeles LGBT Center, mm-hmm. which saved my life. I did therapy, and a couple of the therapists there suggested the certain recovery.
Yeah, you can say it if you want. Up to you.
Well, I mean, you know, they tried to get me into recovery.
Yeah.
And at first I was resistant, but there was this crystal meth
group.
Yeah, sort of harm reduction group.
Oh, harm reduction.
Yeah, with a couple of therapists there and six people. Mm-hmm. And I kept slipping, as they I was just pasty and just so I was almost gray, and I almost died. I was in the hospital after like a crazy.
I know this.
Yeah, it was. I'll just say, without getting too specific, it was drug related,
uh-huh.
and alcohol related, and everything related to that. And
what do you mean? So you had to be? Did an ambulance come?
Yeah, I was put on a gurney, and hot paramedics said,
"I don't see that."
Yeah, mm-hmm. but I couldn't literally get out of bed. I was vomiting cranberries, and but not cranberries. It was stuff for me.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was thrown on a gurney, uh-huh. and one of the guys said, "I don't like the numbers on this guy," meaning the blood. Uh-huh. I was losing a lot of blood, and we have to take him to the quickest hospital, not the place where, you know, my insurance dictated or something, or preferred.
What had happened to you? Do you know?
Yeah, I had hepatitis A.
Okay.
Not B or C.
Okay.
Hepatitis A is the kind that you, if you get. You know, it's like the worst flu ever. You'll never get it again, mm-hmm. or measles or something. But mm-hmm. It's not something that you would transmit to somebody else mm-hmm. later. You know, it's just you don't have to go through interferon or anything like that. It's like something I don't have now. Mm-hmm. You know, you have it, then you're done. Mm-hmm. But it's miserable. And then there was also maybe a gallstone attack at the same time, just by coincidence. Mm-hmm. Who knows? That's what one doctor thought. And so, yeah, I was in intensive care for a few days.
And alcohol and meth exacerbated what that was.
Okay. Yeah. There was something that I just wouldn't have done had I not been high and drunk.
Okay.
Yeah. And So even after that, I kept using mm-hmm. and drinking. And
did this harm reduction group, so they were just like, you can do meth sometimes? Or?
They really were pointing you towards recovery. But right. And there were some people in 12-step programs, and I thought they were like, you know, cult members. And
you did?
Yeah. I was like,
right.
But people would just, you know, like disappear from the group or just go crazy from psychotic episodes. And then I got into back to the booze. On my 40th birthday, I was miserable. I just didn't have in my life what I was just so depressed for whatever reason. I had that spiritual malady. Mm-hmm. I just didn't have I didn't know what was wrong with me, but I knew that I was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And my 40th birthday was just the most boring 40th birthday ever. And I got drunk and then so bombed that I got into a fist fight with a friend,
mm-hmm.
which is so not me, but I did.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where I couldn't go out for a few days afterwards. I was afraid people would say, you know, like, oh, I bumped into a door, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. 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 And so when I'm sitting alone a few days after my birthday, there's what I call the lazy Susan now. Pot,
mm-hmm.
Red wine actually in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
donuts and cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, oh, okay, I need a little bit more pot now. Mm-hmm. Oh, now I've got a little, I'm a little bit paranoid because mm-hmm. pot was so much fun. I could, at parties years earlier, I made friends on it. I could go out to, it was like not pot, you mm-hmm. know, in a way. It was just fun. Mm-hmm. I smoked fun, but then it became super like everybody paranoid. Out. I want to stay, I want to be alone. And yeah. John, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Just, you know, I just want to go sleep and actually just get stoned. Mm-hmm. So my world was becoming very small. Mm-hmm. So, then I had the pot, the red wine, the cigarettes, and the donuts, and I just realized, God, like going from one to the other, I thought, this is really actually boring. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I realized this could be my whole entire life. Mm-hmm. This is more boring than the thought of not doing
anything.
It.
Yeah.
You know, like I was like, because I couldn't imagine not doing any of that.
Yeah.
But now finally I was like, wow. This isn't the way to go.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't know how to stop. You know, I was doing that support group. And then finally, you know, the next day I had told a friend what had happened. And he was in one of the programs mm-hmm. and offered to help. Mm-hmm. And that was October 20th, 2003. So.
And were you immediately into it?
Yes.
Immediately
from day one.
Yeah,
it was not easy.
Right,
my brain was a big molten brick, very mm-hmm. rigid, and mm-hmm. I couldn't smoke enough cigarettes, and mm-hmm. I was very uncomfortable. But I found peace and solace and an oasis in talking to people that had gone through the same thing, and mm-hmm. I really, really glommed on to the, you know, the they're not trite sayings. It's like just stuff that was really practical, mm-hmm. And now. How are we doing on time?
You're amazing. Do you what were, and I don't mean to put you on the spot because it's always hard when someone asks something like this, but what were some of the sayings that spoke to you the most?
I just want to know about the time. Like, what time is it? Because I have my car being towed at 4.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't be more fine.
Okay, good. All right. Okay. We're back.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. Go on.
So, the question?
What were some of the sayings?
Oh, think it through, mm-hmm. you know, that really helped just that, mm-hmm. that one alone. Like I, you know, every time I would feel uncomfortable and cause I knew in the morning, you know what, it's not just about hearing the phrases. It's about knowing if it strikes you that that's something important to that will be helpful mm-hmm. to remember every morning when I meditate mm-hmm. and pray, mm-hmm. you know? So in the mornings I would start doing that. I would just say, you know, please, God, help me to remember to think it through whenever I feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Pause when agitated. Mm-hmm. Fake it till you make it, act yeah. as if, or, yeah. you know, the stuff like I haven't done it in a while, but if I feel like I'm in a really crappy mood.
Right.
And I'm in the shower, sometimes I'll just pretend that I'm in a soap commercial, you know, and really? Then like, hi, and I'm smiling and, you know, letting my Irish spring out or whatever. And I feel better, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and because sometimes it is just about, not always, but sometimes it's about a reset and a shift.
The perception that, yeah. you know, what do they say? You can't think yourself into proper action, but you can act yourself into right thinking. Why does that not sound right?
No, that sounds good.
That doesn't sound right. Okay, but briefly, I want to talk about how you started that recovery, the predecessor to this show, if you will. You worked for a recovery network.
Oh, right. It was called The Hollywood Pitch, where showbiz meets recovery, mm-hmm. and you were one of my...
I was. Favorite guest.
Illustrious guest.
Yes.
Yeah, that was fun. I did that for about a year. It was a weekly show, and I did it with Bennett mm-hmm. as my sort of, you know...
co-host, if
yeah,
you will.
Yeah, exactly. And he was, you know, the funny guy, obviously. Too Dumb Please. And Dumber writer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we talk about doing it again, and that would be fun, mm-hmm. But everybody's so busy. Mm-hmm. Excuse me as I... You know, alcoholics burp too. So alcoholics, they're just like us. So, and that was great. It just, you know, I got to meet, you know, great people like Jim J. Bullock and Holland Taylor from Two and a Half Men was a guest.
Yeah.
She was not an alcoholic.
But she talked about playing one.
Well, her father
okay,
had issues
yeah.
or a family member.
Al-Anon.
Well, I'm not sure.
Yeah, true. Okay. Yeah. Don't mean to diagnose. I certainly don't do that. But yeah, and you had Heather King, yes, amazing writer.
Author and,
yeah.
And the cast of this show called Halfway House. We also talked to producers of House, talking about the doctor, you know, House's pill popping storyline. And,
right.
And we talked about suicide and smoking and
all the
experts.
Fun
and,
topics.
Yeah, it was fun. It was zippy.
So to wrap up.
By the way, congratulations on your show.
To wrap up, what is your life like today as a man in recovery?
Well,
everything else.
Yeah, things are pretty good. You know, there's a friend wrote a song called Life Got in the Way, and it's very sweet poignant. And life does get in the way sometimes. I've got a doggy that one of my three dogs has a thyroid tumor.
Aww.
Yeah, it's inoperable.
Guapo?
Watson, the oldest
Jesus.
One. Yeah, I know. And my dad is going through, you know, it's a milestone. He's 85, and he's... you know, he's 85 and he's got some health issues. But in general, I am, because I'm in recovery, I've done all the work, or, you know, I continue to do it, but I've gotten to really be honest with, I can list all of my character defects, like the, you know, look with joy. I know I'm judgmental and, or can be judgmental, manipulative, childish. I have a sense of entitlement. I'm needy. I'm self-righteous. I'm indignant sometimes. I mean, it can just go on and on. But asking my, you know, asking God to relieve me of these character defects on a fairly daily basis really helps me to see my part in my reactions to the world, and I'm just so much happier because I have, they're like little golden nuggets, you know, like I'm demanding, I objectify rich people, famous people, good looking people, and successful people in show business. But you know what, since I've been doing this from like, you know, for like 10 years now, I don't really anymore. Some of these have been alleviated. I'm like, oh, hey honey, how's it going? You know, I'm just much more comfortable with things. And, you know, I'm self-condemnational and so and critical, I can be very unappreciative. You know, I'm not living in a mud hut in Darfur.
Yeah,
you know, and so, and then also focusing on the goodness of life. I feel so much love. Usually, you know, I have a lot of love in my life. That's what I've learned in recovery is that there's so much. I don't bitch about what I don't have. I mean, I'm unappreciative to some extent here and there. Just things pop up. Like, eh.
I don't see you like that at all.
Well, it's more about fear of the, you know, like worried about the future to some extent. But that, even that, I have much more faith and everything's going to be fine. And I just have to try to get out of myself and be more loving and giving to other people. And I pray for. You know, please God, fill me with a deeper sense of empathy, understanding, humor, courage, strength, wisdom, patience, kindness, joyfulness, humor, creativity, imagination, understanding. And I think of all the good concepts in the universe, and it just, I just start getting all yummy feeling in my bed, or if I'm on my knees sometimes, I'll be praying, or and I just like, I get. My neck starts to uncrick, and I'm like, oh, that's better than a stretch. And it just feels good. And I don't know. I tell other people that are having troubles, I don't know why the way the world is. I don't know why there's war. I don't know why people are mean to me. That was another reason that I got drunk and stoned a lot. It was people are mean. That guy didn't say hi to me when I walked by. I can still get... sensitive, like I just said hi to that person.
I get like that.
What
too.
Is wrong with them? You know, I don't know. They might be autistic. They might have just found out they have cancer.
Right.
They might be having a very busy day.
Right.
And
it's this
didn't even
endlessly
hear.
Taking everything personally and this
right.
thinking it really has to do with us.
Right. Right.
You know.
And I saw the your post today this on After Party Chat your website.
My website. I don't know.
Yeah,
if I read
website.
It. No, I'm kidding.
The doctor talking about. Narcissism and cross.
Oh yes, yesterday's post. You mean
yesterday.
Dr. Paul Hochmeier?
Yeah.
Yes. What does narcissism have to do with alcoholism?
Yeah,
a lot.
Let's ask Hollywood.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a disease of perception, forgetfulness for me. I forget. That's why I need to constantly do the work. If I just sat back and did nothing, mm-hmm. I'd be out there, you know, at a party like, oh, that champagne smells kind of good. Can I have a little bit?
Right.
You know, so it's vigilance. It's, and yeah, I'm a loving, fun, giving friend, but I'm also childish, selfish, self-pitying, wah, wah, wah. I'm grabby. You know,
grabby.
I will be at like an event, like a work event, and there will be like freebies. Like it could be like mints in a tin, and I'm like,
they're going in your pocket.
Like, I think I'm going to get like maybe I'll take 10 so yeah, I can give them away for Christmas. Something you know, crazy. You know, and the universe has exacted revenge by filling my garage with junk.
Yeah,
you know that I'm going through now, but anyway, so life, I was going to say that I'm much closer to my mom and my dad than I ever, ever, ever thought I would be.
Yeah.
I've let them know that, like when I said at the top of your show today, mm-hmm. I don't, when my mom said, do you, you know, that must have been really rough for you, you know, growing up with those 8 kids and not knowing where, you know, and all that. And I said, Mom, it was great. Mm-hmm. You know, thank you in a way, because mm-hmm. it really helped me see, you know, the world with more perspective, mm-hmm. and it shaped me. And that was part of my sort of letting her know that. And I said, I was a weird kid to start, Mom. I was just, you know, strange. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just born a little bit different, mm-hmm. not in a bad way. Mm-hmm. And today, it's like it's in a great way.
Yeah,
you know, it's fine. Say. You know, and not that different from. I'm not as different as I used to think I was.
Right.
Oh my God. You know.
Right. When you get sober, also you realize that there's a lot of different people out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, life. I used to look at like you know TV shows like from a distance, like oh my God, I can't believe those people are that way. Turns out a lot of these shows are based on how crazy and different people are.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So my mom just like her shoulders just lifted and our relationship has been different ever since, you know, closer.
Well, darling, I don't want your car to be towed. So let us end on, you know, you being a beautiful, different, wonderful alcoholic.
Thank you, my man. Love. Oh, my God. Stop
Thank you
it.
So much for doing this podcast.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was John Griffiths on After Party Pod. One John I also want to talk about is the John who sent the nicest email this week. He's a Greek listener. He lives in Hoboken. And he just wrote the sweetest email. And I cannot tell you how much these emails mean to me. So John M., thank you. I hope you guys like John G., and I will see you next time.